Chapter 46. Stockdale was so excited by the events of the evening, and the dilemma that he was placed in between conscience and love, that he did not sleep, or even doze, but remained as broadly awake as at noonday. As soon as the gray light began to touch ever so faintly the whiter objects in his bedroom, he arose, dressed himself, and went downstairs into the road. The village was already astir. Several of the carriers had heard the well-known tramp of Latimer's horse while they were undressing in the dark that night, and had already communicated with each other and Owlett on the subject. The only doubt seemed to be about the safety of those tubs which had been left under the church gallery stairs, and after a short discussion at the corner of the mill, it was agreed that these should be removed before it got lighter, and hidden in the middle of a double hedge bordering the adjoining field. However, before anything could be carried into effect, the footsteps of many men were heard coming down the lane from the highway. "Damn it, here they be," said Owlett, who, having already drawn the hatch and started his mill for the day, stood stolidly at the mill door covered with flour, as if the interest of his whole soul was bound up in the shaking walls around him. The two or three with whom he had been talking dispersed to their usual work, and when the excise officers and the formidable body of men they had hired reached the village cross, between the mill and Mrs. Newberry's house, the village wore the natural aspect of a place beginning its morning labors. "Now," said Latimer to his associates, who numbered 13 men in all, "what I know is that the things are somewhere in this here place. We have got the day before us, and 'tis hard if we can't light upon 'em and get 'em to Budmouth Custom House before night. First we will try the fuel houses, and then we'll work our way into the chimmers, and then to the ricks and stables, and so creep round. You have nothing but your noses to guide ye, mind, so use 'em today if you never did in your lives before." Then the search began. Owlett, during the early part, watched from his mill window, Lizzie from the door of her house, with the greatest self-possession. A farmer down below, who also had a share in the run, rode about with one eye on his fields, and the other on Latimer and his myrmidons, prepared to put them off the scent if he should be asked a question. Stockdale, who was no smuggler at all, felt more anxiety than the worst of them, and went about his studies with a heavy heart, coming frequently to the door to ask Lizzie some question or other on the consequences to her of the tubs being found. "The consequences," she said quietly, "are simply that I shall lose 'em. As I have none in the house or garden, they can't touch me personally." "But you have some in the orchard?" "Owlett rents that of me, and he lends it to others. So it will be hard to say who put any tubs there, if they should be found." There was never such a tremendous sniffing known as that which took place in Nether Moynton Parish and its vicinity this day. All was done methodically, and mostly on hands and knees. At different hours of the day they had different plans. From daybreak to breakfast time the officers used their sense of smell in a direct and straightforward manner only, pausing nowhere but at such places as the tubs might be supposed to be secreted in at that very moment, pending their removal on the following night. Among the places tested and examined were hollow trees, cupboards, culverts, piano graves, clock cases, hedgerows, fuel houses, chimney flues, faggot ricks, bedrooms, rainwater butts, haystacks, apple lofts, pixies, coppers, and ovens. After breakfast they recommenced with renewed vigor, taking a new line, that is to say, directing their attention to clothes that might be supposed to have come in contact with the tubs in their removal from the shore, such garments being usually tainted with the spirit, owing to its oozing between the staves. They now sniffed at smock frocks, smiths and shoemakers' aprons, old shirts and waistcoats, knee naps and edging gloves, coats and hats, tarpaulins, breeches and leggings, market cloaks, women's shawls and gowns, scarecrows, and as soon as the midday meal was over, they pushed their search into places where the spirits might have been thrown away in alarm. horse ponds, mixes and sinks in yards, stable drains, wet ditches, road scrapings, and cinder heaps, cesspools, back door gutters. But still these indefatigable excisemen discovered nothing more than the original telltale smell in the road opposite Lizzie's house, which even yet had not passed off. "I'll tell ye what it is, men," apostrophe said Latimer, "about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we must begin over again. Find them tubs I will." Apostrophe, the men, who had been hired for the day, looked at their hands and knees, muddy with creeping on all fours so frequently, and rubbed their noses, as if they had almost had enough of it, for the quantity of bad air which had passed into each one's nostril had rendered it nearly as insensible as a flu. However, after a moment's hesitation, they prepared to start anew, except three, whose power of smell had quite succumbed under the excessive wear and tear of the day. By this time not a male villager was to be seen in the parish. Owlett was not at his mill, the farmers were not in their fields, the parson was not in his garden, the smith had left his forge, and the wheelwright's shop was silent. "Where the devil are the folk gone?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Latimer, waking up to the fact of their absence, and looking round. "I'll have 'em up for this. Why don't they come and help us? There's not a man about the place, but the Methodist parson, and he's an old woman. I demand assistance in the king's name." Apostrophe, apostrophe, we must find the general public afore we can demand that, apostrophe, said his lieutenant. "Well, well, we shall do better without him," apostrophe said Latimer, who changed his moods at a moment's notice. "But there's great cause of suspicion in this silence, and this keeping out of sight, and I'll bear it in mind. Now we will go across to Owlett's orchard, and see what we can find there." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Stockdale, who heard this discussion from the garden gate, over which he had been leaning, was rather alarmed, and thought it a mistake of the villagers to keep so completely out of the way. He himself, like the excisemen, had been wondering for the last half hour what could have become of them. Some laborers were of necessity engaged in distant fields, but the master workmen should have been at home, though one and all, after just showing themselves at their shops, had apparently gone off for the day. He went into Lizzie, who sat at a back window sewing, and said, "Lizzie, where are the men?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lizzie laughed. "Where they mostly are when they run so hard as this." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she cast her eyes to heaven. "Up there, apostrophe," she said. Stockdale looked up. "What on the top of the church tower?" Apostrophe, he asked, seeing the direction of her glance. "Yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, I expect they will soon have to come down," apostrophe said he gravely. "I have been listening to the officers, and they are going to search the orchard over again, and then every nook in the church." Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lizzie looked alarmed for the first time. "Will you go and tell our folk?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said. "They ought to be let know." Apostrophe, seeing his conscience struggling within him like a boiling pot, she added, "No, never mind, I'll go myself." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she went out, descended the garden, and climbed over the churchyard wall at the same time that the preventive men were ascending the road to the orchard. Stockdale could do no less than follow her. By the time that she reached the tower entrance he was at her side, and they entered together. Nether Moynton church tower was, as in many villages, without a turret, and the only way to the top was by going up to the singer's gallery, and thence ascending by a ladder to a square trapdoor in the floor of the bell loft, above which a permanent ladder was fixed, passing through the bells to a hole in the roof. When Lizzie and Stockdale reached the gallery and looked up, nothing but the trapdoor and the 5 holes for the bell ropes appeared. The ladder was gone. "There's no getting up," apostrophe said Stockdale. "Oh yes, there is," apostrophe said she. "There's an eye looking at us at this moment through a knot hole in that trapdoor." Apostrophe, apostrophe, and as she spoke the trap opened, and the dark line of the ladder was seen descending against the whitewashed wall. When it touched the bottom, Lizzie dragged it to its place and said, "If you will go up, I'll follow." The young man ascended, and presently found himself among consecrated bells for the first time in his life, nonconformity having been in the Stockdale blood for some generations. He eyed them uneasily, and looked round for Lizzie. Owlett stood here, holding the top of the ladder. "What, be you really one of us?" said the miller. "It seems so," said Stockdale sadly. "He's not," said Lizzie, who overheard. "He's neither for nor against us. He'll do us no harm." She stepped up beside them, and then they went on to the next stage, which, when they had clambered over the moldy bell carriages, was of easy ascent, leading towards the hole through which the pale sky appeared, and into the open air. Owlett remained behind for a moment, to pull up the lower ladder. "Keep down your heads," said a voice, as soon as they set foot on the flat. Stockdale here beheld all the missing parishioners, lying on their stomachs on the tower roof, except a few who, elevated on their hands and knees, were peeping through the embrasures of the parapet. Stockdale did the same, and saw the village lying like a map below him, over which moved the figures of the excisemen, each foreshortened to a crab-like object, the crown of his hat forming a circular disc in the center of him. Some of the men had turned their heads when the young preacher's figure arose among them. "What, Mr. Stockdale?" said Matt Gray, in a tone of surprise. "I'd as lief that it hadn't been," said Jim Clark. "If the passant should see him a trespassing here in his tower, 'twould be none the better for we, seeing how a do hate chapel members. He'd never buy a tub of us again, and he's as good a customer as we have got this side o' Wormal." "Where is the passant?" said Lizzie. "In his house, to be sure, that he mid see nothing of what's going on where all good folks ought to be, and this young man likewise." "Well, he has brought some news," said Lizzie. "They are going to search the orchard and church. Can we do anything, if they should find?" said her cousin Owlett. "That's what we've been talking o', and we have settled our line. Well, be dazed." The exclamation was caused by his perceiving that some of the searchers, having got into the orchard, and begun stooping and creeping hither and thither, were pausing in the middle, where a tree smaller than the rest was growing. They drew closer, and bent lower than ever upon the ground. "Oh, my tubs!" said Lizzie faintly, as she peered through the parapet at them. "They have got 'em, I believe," said Owlett. The interest in the movements of the officers was so keen that not a single eye was looking in any other direction. But at that moment a shout from the church beneath them attracted the attention of the smugglers, as it did also of the party in the orchard, who sprang to their feet and went towards the churchyard wall. At the same time those of the government men who had entered the church unperceived by the smugglers cried aloud, "Here be some of 'em at last." The smugglers remained in a blank silence, uncertain whether some of them meant tubs or men. But again peeping cautiously over the edge of the tower they learned that tubs were the things descried. And soon these faded articles were brought one by one into the middle of the churchyard from their hiding place under the gallery stairs. "They are going to put 'em on Hinton's vault till they find the rest," said Lizzie hopelessly. The excisemen had, in fact, begun to pile up the tubs on a large stone slab which was fixed there, and when all were brought out from the tower, two or three of the men were left standing by them, the rest of the party again proceeding to the orchard. The interest of the smugglers in the next maneuvers of their enemies became painfully intense. Only about 30 tubs had been secreted in the lumber of the tower, but 70 were hidden in the orchard, making up all that they had brought ashore as yet, the remainder of the cargo having been tied to a sinker and dropped overboard for another night's operations. the excisemen, having re-entered the orchard, acted as if they were positive that here lay hidden the rest of the tubs, which they were determined to find before nightfall. They spread themselves out around the field, and advancing on all fours as before, went anew round every apple tree in the enclosure. The young tree in the middle again led them to pause, and at length the whole company gathered there in a way which signified that a second chain of reasoning had led to the same results as the first. When they had examined the sod hereabouts for some minutes, one of the men rose, ran to a disused porch of the church where tools were kept, and returned with the sexton's pickaxe and shovel, with which they set to work. "Are they really buried there?" said the minister, for the grass was so green and uninjured that it was difficult to believe it had been disturbed. The smugglers were too interested to reply, and presently they saw, to their chagrin, the officers stand several on each side of the tree, and, stooping and applying their hands to the soil, they bodily lifted the tree and the turf around it. The apple tree now showed itself to be growing in a shallow box, with handles for lifting at each of the four sides. Under the side of the tree a square hole was revealed, and an exciseman went and looked down. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.